The first open enrollment period for the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act began on October 1st, the same day the federal government shutdown went into effect. Although its affordability varies by state, age, and type of coverage, President Obama says that the act allows the uninsured to buy health insurance for a significantly lower rate than they'd get on the individual market. New York Times journalist Elizabeth Rosenthal has come on the show a number of times to discuss the high cost of American health care and her series called Paying Till It Hurts. In her latest article called Affordable Care or A Ripoff, she investigates whether or not the Affordable Care Act is financially viable for the people who are looking to enroll in the plans it provides. The article appeared in the Times Sunday Review on September 29th. I'm very pleased it has brought Elizabeth Rosenthal back to our show today. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
What's been the response since open enrollment started last week, other than the fact that the website really couldn't handle it?
Well, I think part of the reason the website couldn't handle it is there's tremendous interest. Everyone wants to know, is this going to work for me? Because there are so many people out there having problems with affording medical care and medical insurance.
And the Obama administration said that they were not expecting such a huge response, although I can't imagine why they didn't. Five outside technology experts interviewed by Reuters say that they believe flaws in the system architecture, not traffic alone, contributed to the problems. They've had 4 years to work this thing out.
Well, you know, making health insurance and health care affordable is a big, big job, and this is a very complicated system. So, to me, the barometer of whether it's working or not isn't the first day. It's what happens in the next year.
Do we know how many people have signed up already?
No, I think we don't know how many people have signed up. We know how many people have looked at the sites, people have to do a lot of research to figure this thing out.
And a number of people have told me that they get halfway through it and then suddenly it just goes off and then it doesn't remember what they've inputted so far and they have to go through the whole process again. And that's happened to them a number of times. But what kinds of information do people have to give when they register?
Well, you need to give information about your income. Obviously, you need to know where you live, sometimes your age, depending on the state. It's a very, very complicated system. And I think, to me, in some ways, the most telling thing is the system includes $70 million for patient navigators. That means it's, as difficult as your tax return to figure out. So it is not. It's a great idea to insure everyone. It's not the most simple process.
What about the people who don't have access to the internet or don't want to put their personal information online? Is there an office they can go to?
Well, I've seen I don't know the answer to that, but I've seen I know a number of the Community Service Society is helping people out with enrollment. So, yes, I think there are ways to explore your options without being online.
And with Medicare, there are enrollment periods. Is the same thing true here? Is there a deadline?
It's very extended. I mean, you have till the end of the year, and I believe you have 3 months into next year to really sort things out. So they're giving people a lot of time to sort through their options.
But then somebody who has a job now and has medical insurance loses the job within the next 3 months and finds him or herself just past the enrollment period, looking to get into this, and they're going to have to wait a year?
I think there's a clause about life-changing events. So most insurance you can get on or off, including, I believe, the affordable health care plans, if you have some event which changes your status. So I think it will work much the way that other insurance works.
And you can buy into a number of different plans.
Yeah.
And they are you kind of know how good they are based on the metal that they are named after.
Well, were it only that simple.
But bronze, silver, gold, platinum.
And platinum, yes. So, four different levels of plan. The more expensive the metal, the more expensive the plan, and the better the benefits. But as with all insurance, the devil's in the details.
Have deductibles always been attached to insurance plans offered in the United States? Are they attached to these?
these plans, and I think one of the major criticisms of them, is that the out-of-pocket deductibles tend to be high, much higher than those of us who are lucky enough to have employer-provided insurance tend to have. So the deductibles for the plans are around $2,000. Some states it's $3,000. That means before your plan even kicks in, you have to put out $2,000 to $3,000, and that's going to be a burden for a lot of people.
You figured out that your husband's treatment for a recent bicycling injury would cost $700 under some states' silver plans. That's just the
medicine for the treatment.
And, yeah, but that's because it required the use of a specialty drug. Well, that's a lot of money. How much does it cost under employee plans?
Well, you know, we had, I think, a 20% copay, so maybe $200, but it's still a big burden. And actually, when I went to the pharmacy to get it initially, we had some problem with the insurance, so I had to give them a credit card and pay for it. And I said, well, what happens to people who don't have a credit card that can put $1,400 or even $700? I think a lot of people will say, I can't get this drug, and that's, you know, that it is a life-threatening problem to not treat.
A WMIC report on Morning Edition today pointed out that most of the local plans don't provide access to Manhattan hospitals like NYU Langone, but force patients to go to Montefiore Hospital in the Bronx because it charges less.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is, you know, in many ways it's a reprise of the whole HMO era where we find very limited networks for cheaper. And I think, you know, is that better than having no health care? Yes. But is it optimal? Not really.
So with people who've had insurance, are the plans deductibles a big leap from what they've been paying?
It depends what kind of insurance they've had. I think it for all of us, as we've seen our copays and deductibles go up, it's been a big kind of sea change in what health insurance means. I mean, we used to get health insurance that we thought of as you pay your premiums and then you get soup to nuts care. Now, increasingly, the trend has been to transfer costs to the patient. Part of that has a good effect to kind of make you think a little bit more about price. But I think, you know, we're transferring a lot of costs to patients now in a country where small procedures can cost a lot of money. So it's one thing if you say, okay, for this $500 procedure, we want you to pay 10%, $50. But it's another if that $500 procedure costs $50,000 and we want you to pay 10%, well, that's going to become unaffordable for a lot of people.
My guest is Elizabeth Rosenthal, who's been writing a series of articles in the New York Times about the high cost of medical care. Her latest, the one that was in the New York Times Sunday Review a week ago, was called Affordable Care or a Ripoff. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. You're right that an important factor in the Act's affordability is patients' preconceptions of what health insurance is supposed to do. Don't those preconceptions change in different parts of the country?
Well, I think I meant more historically what we expect health insurance to do. So people now are very surprised often. You know, they open a bill and it says patient responsibility, you know, $2,000. You used to not get those kind of bills. You used to say, but I have insurance. And now if you call and you say, but I have insurance, the answer will be, yes, but your insurance doesn't cover this and it involves this copay and deductible. So it's really a lot.
Now, I have an insurance through my union, mm-hmm. and I get those things in the mail, and it'll say something like, well, you know, something, I had some kind of medical procedure, and then they say, they paid the doctor $2.28, my responsibility is $500. And I wonder, what's going on here?
Well, you know, what? Like I said, the devil is in the details, and with all of these plans, too, you can say, I've got silver, bronze, platinum. But those plans are going to then have many, many sub-clauses saying, oh, we don't cover it at this hospital. We might not cover this procedure. So I think the testing of this law is really going to come as people try and use these plans. You know, insurers took this on because they plan to make money on it. And they will do that by kind of restricting care in ways that will make sure they're profitable.
So the insurance companies are happy about the Affordable Care Act.
Yes, as it was presented. I mean, the ones that put their names in the hat to be part of these exchanges, they're not charities. You know, they did this because they thought it was a profit-making venture.
So let's talk about it. Bronze, how much would I theoretically be paying?
Well, you know,
in New York State.
In New York State, I think it's about $400 a month, $300 to $400 a month. But then if you were, depending on your income, that you would get subsidies and that could come down to nothing. So it could be, you know, $150. It could be zero. So it really depends on your income.
Well, $400 a month comes to a nice little sizable amount of money for a year. And that's the bottom.
Right. Right.
And the next one is how much?
I think that the bronze ones are more like $250. The silver ones are $300 to $400, and it goes up from there. It really varies so much by state, by by age. New York, I should little shout out for New York. They don't do age rating, which I think is a good thing. Many states, if you are in your 50s and want a silver plan, the premiums are up $700-$800 a month, so a lot of money.
So if you are a healthy person, would it be probably a better strategy to take one of the less expensive plans?
Yes, I think generally that's true, but you have to remember that even the less expensive plans could leave you out $10,000 a year between the premiums and the deductibles and let me just add that up a little bit, $7,000-$8,000. So if I'm a really healthy person and I'm not making a lot of money, I may think this may not look like a good deal. I mean, as a parent, I would hope my kids would get insurance even when they're healthy, because what it does protect you against is that catastrophic, you know, I need my appendix out, or I get hit by a taxi, and then you're covered. No one's going to go bankrupt if they have these policies, because there is a cap on how much you can lay out each year.
Well, but insurance works where the people who are healthy pay for the people who are not healthy.
Right.
But it sounds like it could still be very expensive here. And I'm thinking about all the opponents to this. They're not talking about this as an issue. Ted Cruz is saying that he fears the public is going to take to this as though it were sugar candy.
Yeah, I think the issue for me is, you know, is waiting to see, are people going to think of this as affordable? I think people should sign on for this in the sense of it's really smart in this country to be covered for catastrophic care, because otherwise you can be in really, really, really big trouble. So, but it's about perception of value in insurance, particularly among those young, healthy people who aren't, you know, they're not thinking about what can go wrong in life. They're thinking about all the good things that are going on.
And I've heard a number of them interviewed, mm-hmm. and they've said, you know, I'm going to take the penalty,
yeah.
because that's going to be a lot cheaper than having to join one of these plans, and I'm not going to get sick for a while.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that some people will play that game and see if they end up on the right side of it. The penalties are quite low the first year. They go up year by year. So eventually, you know, it may make sense. But, you know, this is, you know, people I think are going to be hanging back to see how these plans work if they can.
A physician who does health care policy called in with this information. To get care for January 1st, you have to sign up before January 1st. After that, as long as you sign up before March 30th, you have coverage from the day you sign up forward. Just not retroactively.
Yeah. So, you know, that's helpful.
My guest is Elizabeth Rosenthal. Her latest article on the high cost of American healthcare is Affordable Care or a Ripoff. It was in the New York Times on Sunday in the weekend review section, Sunday, the 29th of September. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us.
Thank you.
We are back with Elizabeth Rosenthal, who has been writing a series about health care costs in America. The most recent one, Affordable Care or a Ripoff, was in the September 29th New York Times Sunday Review. And let's talk a bit about that ripoff. Are you suggesting that there could be a ripoff involved here? That suggests a con game.
Yeah, I didn't love that headline. It wasn't my choice. I don't think it's a ripoff. I think the question is, will it seem affordable? And
isn't the whole idea for it to be affordable? It's called the Affordable Care Act.
Well, and that's, you know, that's an important brand in this country, you know, because that's what people are complaining about. I mean, I'm spending this year writing a series on the high price of American medicine. And it's not that you get nothing. It's just that it's priced way too high. You get good quality care, but, you know, you pay through the nose.
What does the act mean for people with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes?
Well, it probably means that they can expect now to pay $13,000 a year for health care because they will have to pay their premiums. They'll go through that deductible. They'll have to pay their co-pays, and then they're going to hit the cap, which is about $13,000.
So, but many of them have been turned away by insurance companies under present circumstances.
Right. So I think for them, for people who've been turned away from insurers, this is a real blessing. I mean, they can, for the first time, get health care. But for people who have good care, and I think one of the things that we're looking at is, well, a lot of companies who've been giving more comprehensive care than this now say to their employees, okay, you go out and use the exchanges. And so for those people, it could mean more money, not less.
And that cap, that means that if you have a really bad illness, at a certain point, you're just going to be paying out of pocket?
No. The cap means that if you have a really bad illness, this is the maximum you can pay out of pocket for the year. So you add your premium, you have your premiums, and then you add the cap is somewhere between $6,000 and $7,000 per person. So then you're done. Now I would say if we're interested in controlling healthcare costs, one of the concerns about that is if you walk into a hospital in New York City, you've blown through that $6,000 by walking in the door. So it isn't a very effective way to control, to bring down prices.
A listener wrote on our show page wondering if he can upgrade to a better plan if he finds that he has an illness like cancer.
Well,
he's on the bronze and now right. He suddenly realizes he needs more care. Can he just suddenly move up to platinum?
I'm afraid I don't know the answer to that, but there is, you know, I have heard many people say, I'm going to take my chances, not sign up for any plan, and then if I get diagnosed with something, I'll go sign up and get insurance. Now, is that going to be tolerated? There's a lot that's unclear.
And then there are other problems. A number of high-profile companies, including Whole Foods, Papa John's, Applebee's, Hardee's, Trader Joe's, and others, even the Cleveland Clinic, have threatened to lay people off or freeze salaries if the plan goes into effect. Is it that expensive for a company like Applebee or Whole Foods?
Well, providing health care is expensive.
And so is this going to be more expensive than what they have? Or I guess they're not offering anything.
They're not offering any probably now. And I think, you know, part of the problem is so much money in this country goes into the health care industry. It's a big part of our economy. So when we talk about health care, we're often talking about economics and jobs, but not whether it's good for people's health. I mean, I've heard a lot of the Republicans say, oh, well, this is going to – people in my district are going to lose jobs if we do this Affordable Care Act. And I think it's a sad sign of the times that we think about health care in terms of jobs rather than in terms of, well, is it delivering good health?
If Obamacare is only for the uninsured or – is it, or can people covered by their employers enroll if they don't like the rate that their company is offering?
I think if it's for people who don't have employer-based health insurance, but more and more people may not if this is an option. You know, I think that's going to be the long-term question. Will there be a migration over time? Will people like these plans, in which case we're transitioning to a health insurance system that's much more like a lot of the European countries have?
Aren't there a lot of unknowns? For instance, do we have an idea of the impact that increased preventive care could have on medical costs? Because a lot of people don't go to doctors for the checkup that they probably should have, simply because it seems like an unnecessary expense.
Yes, that will be that's a big unknown. The affordable care policies are supposed to cover preventive care 100%, so that may make a big difference. It will make people healthier. Whether it's good economically, who knows?
Well, there's going to be a lot of business for the insurance companies that sign on, but are some expected to lose customers? Or are they expected to lose customers on one side and then gain them on the other?
No, I think, you know, part of what made the Affordable Care Act get through Congress is that it had the backing of the insurers and hospitals and pharma, because they felt it was, you know, 40 million people who weren't insured were now going to have insurance. So that's new business.
But is this an expansion of Medicare, or is this a totally separate approach?
It's a totally separate approach. I mean, I see again and again people when faced with the complexity of the Affordable Care Act plan saying, wow, why didn't we just open Medicare for everyone? It would have been much simpler.
That would have been a single-payer plan.
Yeah.
And there was stronger opposition to that because it was seen as socialized medicine.
Right. You couldn't have gotten that through Congress. So this was the alternative that was acceptable to, you know, at the time, left and right, to the business interests in health, which are very strong in this country, to patients. But it's certainly a lot more complicated than just saying, okay, everyone, you want to sign up for Medicare, we'll give you a sliding scale premiums and anyone can come in.
Is it possible to talk about this without mentioning that each state is different? Would New Yorkers have different kinds of plans than people in New Jersey and Connecticut? And do people in Massachusetts who already have Romney Care even care about whether this thing happens or not?
I think it's much less important for them because they essentially have it already. And, you know, the reports from Massachusetts are that people are pretty happy with it. So I think that's, you know, the good sign for the future. As, you know, it does depend a lot on where you live and how old you are and what's available locally, how the hospital network is. But that's true anyway. I mean, that's true pretty much for those of, you know, you and I, we live in New York. That's unfortunate from a healthcare point of view because it's a really expensive place to get healthcare. But I'm not moving someplace else for that reason.
On the other hand, New York State has really embraced the Affordable Care Act. Some states have not.
Yes.
And some states are helping people get on. Other states are doing everything possible to make it more difficult or just ignoring large sections of it.
Yep.
So where in the country would Obamacare be the cheapest? Do we know?
No, I don't know where the rates are lowest. I do know that New York, people are really praising the New York plans for being very well designed, very affordable, having good financial incentives. So I think if you have been priced out of insurance and you live in New York, you're in a pretty good place. You know, some of them are not so well designed and have a lot more unpredictable costs.
A listener wonders about mental health care coverage under the ACA.
Well, again, you know, devil is in the details. There was a big push from the ACA to say that mental health is health and it needed to be covered the same way as physical health. But you got to look at the plan. And again, you know, for mental health care, which can be very expensive if you need inpatient care, the fact that there is this annual cap will make a huge difference for people. On the other hand, if what you're thinking of using that mental health coverage for is your weekly visit to the psychiatrist, you're going to be paying out of pocket for a lot of that.
But it's my sense that when people are looking at the various plans available, they will be thinking along those lines. If one plan says that they will cover visits to the shrink, then somebody who does that might sign on with that one. Somebody else who has diabetes might very well look to a different plan, which would probably be more helpful to them.
Right. And that was the idea behind the patient navigators, that the navigators could help an individual sit down and say, okay, your big cost each year is for your insulin, so let's find a plan that has really good prescription drug coverage. Yours is for your outpatient psychiatry. So that is the idea of the navigators, how well that will work in practice. You know, I don't know if you've ever seen the details of your insurance plan. I certainly have asked and been given a summary of mine, but it's inscrutable at that level.
Well, as I understand it, the plan simply boils down to no.
Well, often it does seem to be that way, but you know, the problem is the front page says yes, and then page 37 tells you why that yes really meant no.
I recently had a problem where they suddenly decided that I was no longer employed by WNYC and I no longer was on the plan.
Yes, we
see this. And I had to prove that I was here, even though it would have been very easy for them to check.
Yes, you know.
Alyssa called in to say that she'd always thought preventive care is free, but that's not the case. Ultrasound kicks it into diagnostic. She has Blue Cross in New Jersey and no way to find out about whether or not you're covered for things ahead of time.
Yes, that's certainly a problem with current insurance and future insurance, that there often isn't. And people can say, oh, preventive care is free, but if they find something on a preventive scan or a preventive colonoscopy, then it becomes diagnostic and it's no longer free. So there are a million ways to be caught, you know, with the bill.
Age is an important consideration here. I assume older people are more likely to sign up. Or will this also be in competition with Medicare and Medicaid?
No, this is for pre-Medicare. I mean, this was meant not for the Medicaid population, but to fill that gap between Medicaid and commercial insurance. So I think, you know, this is really, a wonderful, wonderful thing for people with pre-existing conditions and for kids under the age of 26. You know, it's a wonderful thing for a lot of people, but it's not the answer.
So let's, in the brief time that we still have left, mm-hmm. talk about the pros and cons. Mm-hmm. The pros are, you just stated them. Are there any more?
Yes, I think the yearly out-of-pocket cap is a huge pro. No one will have to sell their house or, you know, maybe $13,000 someone could get bankrupt over that, but the likelihood is much less than if you owe a $200,000 hospital bill. So I think that is huge.
And then there are subsidies for people who might lose everything for $13,000.
Right, there are subsidies. So I think it really is a safety net, which we haven't had, which you know, tens of millions of Americans haven't had. There is this group that the New York Times pointed out last week that falls between Medicaid and the Affordable Care Act. Now, 8 million people who are not covered by the Affordable Care Act or Medicaid. But that's really because the governors in those states didn't want to play in the Medicaid expansion that went with it. So,
some people are predicting that if the ACA turns out to be a success in the other states, that the ones with the reluctant governors will change.
Yeah,
because their constituents are going to say, hey, my cousin in the next state is getting all sorts of things I'm not getting.
Right. I think that will happen. And will this solve the healthcare problem for 40 million people? No. But will it solve it for a big chunk of those people? Yes. And I think, you know, that's an admirable thing.
Well, what is the biggest negative?
The biggest negative is that we have not, through the Affordable Care Act, faced this pricing issue, I think, that it still will require people to have significant health care outlays each year that will render a lot of care just unaffordable or will make them not want to get care. And I think until we more directly address the pricing issue, we won't get affordable health care for everyone in America.
the sorts of things that you have been writing about in your columns, like the incredible expense for a colonoscopy, for example, or a hip replacement.
Or, and this, you know, a teaser for what's coming up, or this issue of prescription drug costs. You know, this my husband's medicine would have been unaffordable, Affordable Care Act or not, for a lot of people.
We have seconds left, but yeah. The medical devices tax, which has upset a lot of people, you think that's going to be taken out?
I don't think so.
Because it's what's going to pay for it still?
Yeah, it's going to pay for it, and it's the right thing to do.
Elizabeth Rosenthal has been here a number of times to talk about rising medical costs in America. Today, we were talking about her article, Affordable Care or a Ripoff. She doesn't like that word, ripoff. It was in the New York Times Sunday Review on September 29th. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you.
On tomorrow's show, we'll talk to the directors of a Frontline documentary about how the NFL has dealt with concussions over the years and why ESPN has refused to air it. And then Kelly Carlin talks about life with her father, the great comedian George Carlin. Also, National Book Award winner Norman Rush discusses his long-awaited novel, Subtle Bodies. And Elizabeth Smart explains how she survived being abducted and held captive for 9 months and how she convinced her kidnappers to return to Utah, where she was rescued by police. The Leonard Lopez Show is produced by Blake Neshick, Drew Corcoran, and Jessica Miller. Melissa Egan is the executive producer. Jason Isaac was at the audio controls, and we had help today from Hugh Sampson, Brittany Mania, and contributing producer Fran Jacobs. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.